Cuba has long been a fascination for its neighbors here in the United States. 90 miles across the Strait of Florida, we still tend to look at Cuba as a romanticized time warp, thanks to the classic cars and its colonial architecture. As a leading authority on American travel to Cuba, Christopher P. Baker joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to encourage us to get a broader view of Cuba, to venture beyond the dominant city, the capital of Havana. Chris, thanks for joining us, and it's good to have you back.
Rick, it's a pleasure to be with you again.
So you're the man when it comes to Americans visiting Cuba. You're writing the National Geographic Guidebook to Cuba, you lead motorcycle tours around the island, and you've been tracking the delicate dance between the American and Cuban governments now for decades. It's been a few years since you last joined us. Can you just get us up to date on your recent travels in Cuba and what's new for travelers there?
Sure. Well, Cuba is still the destination that I love more than anywhere else and where I go to more than anywhere else. So this last year, I was there January through almost all of April, leading mostly photo tours. So that's where I'm from right now. I'm kind of focused through the lens, as it were, as I take people around Cuba.
And what about the ongoing complexities of Americans actually getting in? Is it relatively open now and easy for Americans to travel in Cuba, whether they're joining a tour or going on their own?
Well, restrictions are still in place, but most Americans don't realize that they can literally just make an airline reservation tomorrow and fly in tomorrow, pre-approved by the U.S. government under a license category for legal travel called Support for the Cuban People.
The visa sounds like it's just a routine or just a simple hurdle you go through. You just fill out a form and they ask you why you're going there and you say for the good of the Cuban people.
Not even that difficult, Rick. There is no written form. It's pre-approved and it's on a honor system that if you believe you're going to be supporting the Cuban people, which means, you know, staying at B&Bs and eating at private restaurants, etc., which any wise person would do these days, then you're legal and off you go and that's what you do.
Who flies to Cuba from the United States and what are the gateway cities?
Well, most of the major airlines. So United, JetBlue, Southwest, but the big boy in town is American Airlines. They have 6 flights a day out of Miami.
Hmm.
And that's just to Havana, and they fly to many other cities also.
When I talk to people about their Cuban experiences, it's always about the people. And in your books, you seem to have an enduring respect and regard for the Cuban people. It's an admiration that a lot of people wouldn't understand if they just were basing their judgment on what they hear in the news here. What is it about the Cubans that you meet?
Yeah, it's all about the Cuban people. I mean, there are so many qualities that I just love that some of them appear unique to them. Not least is their openness. My God, there's few places in the world where you can walk down the street or just meet somebody and you are invited into their house. And there's genuine love and affection. And there's no animosity towards Americans based on U.S. policy going back 7 decades of U.S. embargo still in place. That really doesn't factor into how they judge you.
If any society had grounds to have a chip on their shoulder about meeting an American, I think it would be somebody who's living with the consequences of our embargo. But as an individual American down there, I did not feel a bit of that edge.
No, in fact, it's quite the opposite. They seem to love you because you're American, and there are all these affinities in common from baseball to old American cars that they can chat about. But they are amongst the most vivacious, culturally advanced people I've ever come across also.
What I'd like to talk about, Chris, is, of course, Havana's great, but seeing Havana and then using it as a springboard to get out into the country. First of all, there's a lot of, it just seems like all through Latin America, the colonial capital is a big deal. I mean, in Cuba, it's Trinidad, right?
Well, Trinidad is the quintessential colonial city. It's one of 7 UNESCO World Heritage Cities in Cuba because of the way that it has managed to retain more or less colonial integrity, if you will. It's a time warp city on a hill. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful, dating back from, well, it was founded in the 16th century, but the housing that you will see in the center of Trinidad is 18th century for the most part.
Wow, that is gorgeous. I remember it's like a two-story town, isn't it? It all goes back to a day long before elevators.
Absolutely. And it was once the wealthy based on sugarcane industry. And when it was replaced, or rather the sugarcane industry bypassed it because there was no road connection to Trinidad, and the rest of Cuba evolved as a sugarcane growing area, and Trinidad was left behind because it was antiquated and it was pickled in aspic, in a sense.
Hey, one thing is the opposite of Trinidad and the colonial charm is Varadero. Is that how you pronounce that?
Varadero, yes. It's not off limits to Americans, but in one sense it is, because Varadero is a 12-kilometer-long white sand beach, and it's lined with hotels, most of them all-inclusive hotels. But under U.S. law, there is a restriction. You cannot, you may not legally spend time just lazing on a beach. And these days, nor may you stay in any hotel in Cuba, because all the hotels, especially the all-inclusives, are actually owned by the Cuban government.
Oh,
so
since
Trump,
attached.
That is banned. Yeah.
That is
yeah.
Why it's a nice thing our government's letting us go there, but the string attached is we can't patronize businesses owned by the Cuban government. And I was going to think, Varadero is sort of like the Cancun of Cuba. It's an artificial Cuba. It's miles of resorts on the beach. It's probably filled with tour groups from Europe and Canada and all-inclusive kind of resorts. And you devoted 20 pages of it in your guidebook. And I thought, what a miserable experience to have to research 20 pages of resort hotels.
Oh, gosh, the research for the Moon Guidebook was something else. But you may be surprised, Rick. These days you go to the main resort areas and what do you find there? They're mostly Cuban families staying there, Cubans. There are so many Cubans who have gained access to foreign currency, and of course they get special deals in Cuba these days from the Cuban state, and they're vacationing there.
Well, I think, quote, communist governments all over the world are having to live with kind of a sham that, yes, they're communist in their ideals or whatever, but the reality is you got to have capitalism to play ball, and it's working that way. In Cuba, there's actually two parallel currencies, right?
There was. 2 years ago, they did away with one of them. So there's one currency now.
Yeah.
It's the Cuban peso. And that tourist money that you were familiar with when you went no longer exists.
Ah.
It's had profound economic consequences because the distinction in value between them was so great that there's been huge inflation as they've adopted the lower-valued Cuban peso, and there's a great fluctuation of exchange rates on the determined by the black market, of course.
Yeah, I just was very frustrated by that because in practice, the tourist would use the tourist currency, but I always felt that that was just giving up to the double sort of standard of there's the tourist's world and the real world, but now everybody's at least got the real-world currency.
Yeah, just one currency.
Christopher P. Baker's our guide to Cuba beyond Havana right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Growing up in England, Chris got a master's in Latin American studies, and he's been exploring Cuba for the past 30 years. He writes the National Geographic Traveler's Guidebook to Cuba, as well as other titles on Costa Rica, Colombia, Panama, the Dominican Republic, Japan, and Scotland. Chris also recommends day trip destinations in his book, Perfect Day, California. Chris is joining us from his home in Southern California. What's an example of, you can look at museums and you can look at fancy buildings that have some history. What's a short list of experiences that you would recommend for somebody that wants to have a more vivid time with the culture? I mean, for instance, you could go to a rodeo, you could go to a baseball game. What are some things?
I think one of the things that stands out is you'd head to tobacco country. So you'd head west of Havana to Pinar del Rio, especially to Vinales Valley. And you'd head up into the individual farms and you'd learn tobacco 101 from a farmer who'll roll a cigar from freshly harvested leaves right in front of you and hand it over to you and you smoke together with the farmer.
Oh.
I love that.
I did that, I think, right in the valley you're talking about. And a lot of times when I'm traveling, I'm a TV producer, and I'm always thinking, what could make good TV? And I looked at those weathered hands and the weathered tobacco leaves together.
Out in the sun, sure.
And it was under that thatched canopy, and it was so organic, and it was so filled with heritage and love and passion. And to see that beautiful man rolling that beautiful cigar, knowing, I don't even know what's a good cigar or a bad cigar, but knowing how many people would kill for that cigar. And then to see him tie it together with 19 other cigars into a little bundle. I just thought, what a vivid, beautiful experience. Sure. And it was sort of just magical to be at that rustic table watching it happen.
Yep, absolutely.
So that would be something to put on your list. I think you can connect with a community by going to the baseball diamond.
Yeah, we were just talking about Viñales Valley. Just a small village, but like everywhere in Cuba, it's got a baseball field, and Cubans are passionate about baseball. And getting in there and even being invited out onto to swing a bat at the ball is always a possibility. It's a lot of fun to watch them because they play with so much passion. That's one of the adjectives I'd use about Cubans, is they are full of passion, be it music, be it dance, be it baseball.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're exploring Cuba with Christopher P. Baker. Chris writes the National Geographic Traveler Guidebook to Cuba. He leads photography and motorcycle tours around the island, and you'll find links to his work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Christopher, I think a lot of Americans, they know Havana, and they probably know Viñales, and they probably know Trinidad. But what else, especially on the east end of the island, would you recommend? What are some other places that we should be mindful of as we cobble together an itinerary?
Cuba is as far east to west as California is north to south, so there's tremendous diversity. In the east, you have Baracoa, the oldest city in Cuba, founded in the very start of the 16th century, and it is surrounded by rainforest. Cacao is grown there. It has its own indigenous cuisine based on the early pre-Columbian Taino culture. Santiago de Cuba nearby, and Guantanamo. Santiago, by the way, is the hotbed of the revolution. It's where the revolution succeeded, and very Afro-Cuban. The majority of the population is African, so very, very distinct from Havana in the West.
Now, when you come into a town that is a rustic town, not a wealthy town, a town that has very little tourism, what does the American traveler do? I mean, is there one hotel that's used to Western travelers? Would that serve as sort of your tourist information office? Because they certainly wouldn't be one in the town. Where would you eat? What are the challenges you would have from a communicating point of view and connecting with that town?
Well, for sure, these places are less cosmopolitan by many degrees from Havana, of course. But you'd be surprised that everywhere you go in Cuba these days, there are private B&Bs, always very clean. Private restaurants, there may not be sushi as you could get in Havana, but you're certainly going to eat well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lead a photo tour every year to Eastern Cuba, the three places I mentioned, Baracoa, Santiago, and Guantanamo. In all of these places, we're staying at very nice B&Bs, mm-hmm. eating at the best paladars around. I'm taking you out to cultural sites such as one near Baracoa, where the population is very clearly, facially, descendants from the Taino population. And you're going to have a classic Taino indigenous-style meal out in the outdoors.
Tell me more about that. What are the indigenous people?
The Taino, which that was the cultural group throughout the Greater Antilles when Columbus arrived, and decimated by the Spanish conquistadors, no surprise, but
surviving
some of them
day?
In Cuba got up into the mountains and survived.
Wow.
And just one look at their faces, you can tell their heritage.
Wow. So there's many different dimensions on that island. And of course, people are going to go to the Caribbean dreaming about a lovely day on the beach. when you're doing your tours, what's your favorite tip for enjoying that kind of a luxurious hedonistic day?
Well, I have to be very conscious that U.S. law does not permit it.
Oh, that's right.
And so
you can't
U.S.
even
law
say.
States literally that kind of 9 to 5, you have to follow, and I quote, a full-time schedule of activities that are in line with whatever license category that you're traveling under. And in most people's case, it will be what's called support for the Cuban people.
I guess one way you could help out the local people and be in good stead with your visa would be to hire a local guide. What would you say the average worker earns in Cuba, out in the fields, in a day?
Yeah, well, this is a tough call because so many Cubans have access to either income that's coming from the tourist sector or from family remittances. But in terms of salaries these days, the Cuban state salary probably averages now the equivalent around $45 to $50 a month.
So let's just wait. Let's just think about that. $50 a month. That's $2.50 a day if you work 20 days.
It needs qualifying.
Yeah.
The big qualifier, Rick, is that we take for granted that we have mortgage, we have insurance, we have maybe an educational debt.
Okay.
None of these factor into the Cuban reality. Nobody pays a mortgage.
Wow.
Right? Nobody has a debt on a house. Nobody's paying insurance, etc. So the living costs are exponentially lower than they are for us. So $50.
It's like pocket money to have $3 a day because your food, your education, your medicine, your housing is covered.
Right. So, but nonetheless, Cubans definitely need more than the state salary to you get more than the basics to exist in a month. And so a lot of people are making money from remittances or from some aspect of the tourist trade or from money that is passed down through the tourist trade as capitalistic tourist trade multiplies its effect by feeding the opening of new B&Bs who hire locals, etc.
Okay, my big passion is hiring a local guide. They don't need to be a great guide. They just need to be friendly and honest and speak English and have that sidekick, that friend, that negotiator, that whatever on my team. And it's always awkward when you think, okay, people make $50 a month. I'm going to be paying him a lot more than that in a day. But I don't want to be stingy. You're an insider. You know how the business works. You've got friends in Cuba. If you can find a local guide, what would be a very good daily payment for him that would be realistic for you?
This is fairly easy because I hire Cuban guides in all my tours. So $100 a day would be typical.
Mm-hmm.
You may be surprised at some of the money I throw out. You know, I have a photo tour called Sensual Havana. It's glamour, essentially, fine art nude. But the models that we're using there will get up to $300 for a half day.
Yeah.
I have my Cuban photo assistant. I pay more than $100, $150, et cetera.
So there's two tiers in the economy. But in a nutshell, if you're a traveler and if you can find a reputable local guide for $100 a day, you're not getting ripped off. That's a fair payment.
That's probably an industry standard right now in Cuba.
And by the way, your photos are beautiful. I enjoyed looking at them at ChristopherPBaker.com. Let's just wrap up our conversation here by a tip from you. Is there a phrase or two that we should know as we travel around Cuba that can endear us to the locals?
One tip that would certainly raise eyebrows and go, wow, this guy knows Cuba. You meet some Cuban, you say, ¿Qué bola? How's things going?
¿Qué bola? Like that?
¿Qué bola?
¿Qué bola? ¿Qué bola?
Yeah.
Que bola.
Yeah, que bola.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And how can I say happy travels?
Feliz viaje.
Feliz viaje. All right, Christopher. Thanks and best wishes.
Likewise.
Chris Baker leads custom tours of Cuba each year. And among his photographic books is Mi Moto Fidel, Motorcycling Through Castro's Cuba. His website is ChristopherPBaker.com. An amazing level of detail has been unearthed in and around Pompeii at the base of Italy's notorious Mount Vesuvius. It's where you can compare Roman society from 2,000 years ago and how we live today. Up next, Nina Bernardo takes your calls with advice for seeing the Roman world in almost living color at Pompeii. We're at 877-333-7425.